afternoon. I call the Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Friday, April 14th, 2023, and the time is 3:30 p.m. Please remember to silence all cell phones. Members present, Co-Chair Giesel, Vice Chair Senator Wilikowski, Senator Klayman is here, Senator Kawasaki is here, and Senator Kaufman is here, and Senator Dunbar will be joining us in a bit. So I'd like to thank our support staff this afternoon, Carrie Cooperator and Amanda Kraft. It's Friday, and we're just about done for this afternoon. So today's agenda will be considering the following governor appointees: Big Game Commercial Services Board, Michael Flores, and Board of Fisheries, Jared Godfrey, Greg Svensson, and Mike Wood. So we're going to go to the Big Game take a brief it easy. Back on the record, we're going to switch our order here a minute. We're going to go to Board of Fish first, and let me turn all these pages. Excuse me. So we do have four appointees today. The plan is to hear a statement from each appointee and have the committee members ask questions, hear public testimony after each one. And Amanda, is Flores on? Okay, Flores is still not on. So we're going to switch, and we're going to go to our Board of Fisheries. So with that, we have three appointees to the Board of Fisheries. And I'd like to provide just a little bit of context before we invite you folks up to the table, one in person and two online. And let me flip right over here to the Board of Fish. And the Board of Fish consists of seven members appointed by the governor on the basis of public interest and public affairs, good judgment, knowledge, and the ability in the field of any action of the board, with the view of providing diversity of interest and points of view in the membership. Members must be residents of the state, appointed without regard to political affiliation or geographical location of residence. And with that being said, we're going to open up and hear from Mr. Wood. So let me switch here to Board of Fisheries. Mr. Wood, are you with us? Michael Wood?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we jumped a little bit ahead of the schedule, and you and I just talked on the phone, so I knew you'd be close. So we're jumping over to the Board of Fisheries, and please put your name on the record, and the floor is yours.
No problem. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Co-Chair and members of the Senate Resources Committee. For the record, my name is Mike Wood. I live remotely in Chase, Alaska, about 5 miles north of Talkeetna. I came to Alaska in 1989 as a climber and climbing guide for the National and for the Alaska Mountaineering School. I've been a guide in the mountains for about 20 years. And when I was going out, my true outdoor profession was being a carpenter, a welder, and log builder, a commercial fisherman. So that's what I do year round. Now I live on a remote. I have a commercial set netting permit at the mouth of the Susitna River, 100 miles, where I catch fish directly for Alaskans and catcher seller them to people and friends in Anchorage, Wasilla, Fairbanks, and Talkeetna. And then throughout the years, for one reason or another, because of my interest in the fish and the habitat around the area and the Mat-Su, I joined the Mat-Su Fish and Wildlife Commission. I've been a member of that commission for 10 years. I've six of which I've been the chairperson of the commission. I'm also on the Upper Susitna Advisory Committee. I'm the chair of the Chase Community Council up here. I'm also chair of the Susitna River Coalition. As the Fish and Wildlife Commission chair, we deal mostly with habitat issues here in the Mat-Su, and sport fishing, economic dilemmas. We've got invasive species, Elodia, pike, and then every 3 years we go through this board cycle where we deal with allocation. I've been through two Board of Fisheries cycles now for Cook Inlet. I've got through separate hatchery committee meetings, and I've Bristol Bay Finfish just recently. I really think the Board of Fisheries is an incredibly democratic process. I was surprised every time I've been there how so many people have such deep, passionate interest in the resource with all their perspectives. Proposals speak to the proposals. Everybody speaks to the proposals. And then there's all this deliberation, and hopefully decisions come out of that that are the best resource and features. And in cooking it, obviously, the tension between the commercial and the sport fishery and trying to negotiate that has been somewhat of an art. I feel like I've been mentored by some good people on the Mat-Su Fish and Wildlife, Engel and Peter Probasco. And so I look forward to the idea of going to the Board of Fisheries, but fully eyes, knowing that as a remote log builder, I'm sitting down and doing homework night isn't my forte. I know it's going to take a lot of time and effort to become familiar with science and listening to the comments of the users and traveling around the state to become more intimately aware of how other people fish is going to be super important. I already do like to travel around the state in winter, but it's not and visit with friends, but I see this as another opportunity to play a part. My knowledge of how the state fisheries work, how the people live off the resources, I really enjoy that part of it, and I'm with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game just to learn more. So I really appreciate the nomination, and humbly look forward to moving forward if confirmed. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Wood, you're not on Kehiltna Glacier calling in, are you? It's a little broken up.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I am not on the Kehiltna Glacier, I promise. Is this? I cleaned the sawdust out of the... I try a different spot if that would help.
Yeah, you're not coming. We can get parts of you really good, and then other parts we can't. So, if I don't know if
okay. Let me try this. How does this sound? Is this any better?
It is. Okay. All right.
Sometimes it's a good spot.
All right. I'm going to look to my committee. Questions.
Okay.
All right, hang on. Senator, Co-Chair Geisel has
bad reception. I could step outside.
Yeah, I'm going to promise to behave, and Mr. Wood and I have a history on power conversations. So I was going to throw a zinger out there for Mr. Wood, but I'll be nice, Mr. Wood. So, Co-Chair Geisel.
Thank you, Mr. Wood, for meeting with us today and being willing to serve on this board. So in your application, you talk about the Board of Fishery being an eye-opening experience and the democratic way that the board functions. Do you feel that subsistence has allowed enough voice to have a democratic representation on the board?
Madam Co-Chair, in the past, there's been people specifically designated to speak to subsistence. I'm not sure if that's the case here. I know that they wanted to be on this board as a commercial fisherman. Subsistence is a state priority. It's a law. And it comes before there's conservation and then there's allocation. So it is the first at the table as far as I see. I am familiar with subsistence, very familiar with subsistence. My life here is closer to Costco. I'm the same as people that live up on the Yukon, but I'm very familiar with it, and try to live my life revolving around wood, water, heat as much as possible in the yard. At the table for the Board of Fisheries, I'm not sure it has gotten its full compliance. So I hope that answers your question.
Could you repeat that last sentence? You broke up.
I'm just not sure at the table of the Board of Fisheries, it's gotten its full its full hearing.
Follow up?
Yeah, so thank you for your response, Mr. Wood. So you talk in your statement about management decisions to help sustain the resource and the public livelihoods, and you talked in your comments about living off the resources. So you just now spoke about living in a rural setting. So how much do you and you also said that you thought you were being suggested for the board because of your commercial fishing occupation. Do you depend on fisheries for your everyday food source? How much would you consider yourself a subsistence fisherman?
Madam Co-Chair, I'm not sure, given where I live in the state, I can self-subsistence because I'm on the road system and I have access to grocery stores. That being said, I eat wild food every day where I live. And when I commercial fish, I fish for residents of the state who can't get net or buy directly from our business of the Susitna River. So I feel like I help Alaskans' food security and people that need local food get that food that they need. And the extra that we have, we send to a Klutna tribal, Chickalin tribal village. So I cannot consider myself subsistence, but I very much value food from my front yard.
Thank you very much for your answer. And by the way, wherever you're standing, you came through much more clearly just now. So thank you for that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I won't twitch.
Mr. Wood, I have a question, and this is Click. I just want to, we're going into the third year in a row on the Yukon where we're not going to have any Chinook. It's painful to go down that river system and not smell one whiff of smoke in a smokehouse. And that is their main source of protein. And, I would just like to know, are you going to listen to the people when they come before you? because this is a cultural lifestyle that is on the cusp of maybe going in the wrong direction. And I just want to know from you, are you going to listen to the people?
Mr. Chair, I think that's the most gut-wrenching part of wanting to be on this Board of Fisheries is being in that predicament with the people on the UKRN and non-forest that create management for that. I vary in conservation prior to allocation so that all user groups bear the burden of conservation. I'm living here in the Mat-Su. We also have a limited king salmon run. We have had that for quite a long time now. And there's been very little to no fishing for that throughout Cook Inlet. Still, it's on the road system. It's not can barely compare to the Yukon and Kuskokwim. And I very much look forward to speaking with people those river systems on the interior and on the coast to understand how their lives are being impacted by the lack of kings and chum salmon.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee members? Seeing none, thank you. We're going to go to public testimony now, and I'm going to open public testimony. Is anyone in the room wishing to testify? Seeing none, I'm going to go to, I believe it's Gary Hollier in Kenai. Is that accurate?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Gary Hollier, Kenai resident, a lifelong Kenai resident. Thank you.
Yes, please put yourself on the record in 2 minutes of testimony, please.
Okay, it'll be kind of short. I thought we were going to take, we'll take them one at a time. And thank you for letting me testify. Thank you for the governor and the staff for putting these three board members up for a possible Board of Fish appointment. Speaking directly to Mr. Woods, I've met him a few times at a couple Board of Fish meetings. I think he has a lot of high energy. He spent countless hours volunteering on fish issues. I think fishing issues is his forte. He's real easy to talk to, and I certainly would hope that he gets passed on from this committee. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you. And just to hang on, we'll be back to you on the other two.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Next, we're going to go to Shannon Martin, Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. And Mr. Martin, if you can hear us, we're going to just be speaking specifically to Mr. Wood's appointment. We'll get back with you on the other two. And if you can hear us, the floor is yours. Introductions in 2 minutes, please.
Hi, good afternoon, Co-Chairs Bishop and Madam Co-Chair Diesel. My name is Shannon Martin, for the record, and speaking on behalf of the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. And we, too, would like to express our support for Mike Wood. We feel that he would bring a good mixture of balance to the sport. He does have experience, with his work with the Mat-Su Fish and Wildlife Commission. And we feel that he would bring that experience and provide active listening to the board. And he would represent a balanced use of subsistence, personal sport, and commercial fisheries.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. And we'll be back to you here briefly on the other two.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. All right. So that appears to be all online for Mr. Wood, and no one in the room. One more. Oh, well, there he is, the man, the myth, and the legend, Mr. Coleman.
Good afternoon, resource members. Thanks for allowing me to test this afternoon. I've met Mike Wood several times at board fish hearings. I know he's as Mr. Hawley represented, very energetic, and I also know that he puts a lot of time and effort into the Mat-Su Commission on Fish and Wildlife. I think he's a fair and balanced young fellow who's gonna do very well and serve the public very well at the Board of Fish, and I highly recommend him. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Coleman. All right, now that appears everybody online, nobody else in the room, we are going to close public testimony on Mr. Wood, and With that, we're going to go to Mr. Greg Svensson, Board of Fisheries appointees. And thank you for being here today. And if you can hear us, put yourself on the record. Yep.
Through the chairs, my name is Greg Svensson. I live in Anchorage. I want to appreciate Governor Dunleavy appointing me, I think. I know that this is going to be an interesting experience, to say the least. I was born in Anchorage, a second-degree Alaskan, generation Alaskan. I went to graduate from West High. I then went to AMU, which is now Alaska Pacific University, on a basketball scholarship and spent my 4 years there. And I came out with a degree, a BA and a master's degree in education, with an emphasis in health, physical education, and recreation, and a couple of minors in biology and history. I taught at Roaming Middle School in West and did a lot of coaching because I was a PE and a health teacher. And I did teach for 13 years. In the last 4 years, I taught at SAVE, which is with dropout kids, and got them jobs in the community for which they received elective credits for to catch up because these kids were all behind in credits and so on. Okay, thank you. I also, while I was there, I served on a health curriculum committee, and we rewrote all the health curriculum for the Anchorage School District. The last couple years that I was teaching, I got involved with some construction-type stuff, and I ended up building a couple hundred units in Anchorage to Girdwood, and developed a couple subdivisions, and became a landlord, and I'm still... at the district, I get to be a landlord today. I've served on boards, you know, some condo type boards. I live on the O'Malley Airstrip, and since 1986, and have been the president and this year co-president of that association. I also currently serve on a bridge board, that's CARDS. And so I have some experience with boards. I have fished extensively throughout Alaska, all through down here, Juneau, Ketchikan, Sitka, Petersburg, Wrangell. I've fished and hunted down in these areas quite a bit. And I've been in Prince William Sound fishing. I've been on Kodiak fishing. I've been in Bristol Bay fishing, the Nooshigak, Knack, Kwijak, and a number of other streams over there. I also fished in South Central a lot. I have a cabin at Lake Creek, which is up the Yentna River, and I also have a spot on the Kenai River, which I Poacher's Cove, which I call the poor man's way to be on the river. We have an RV and that sort of thing. I guess Alaska's been good to me, and I kind of feel like I owe it something, and I want to give back to it. And so I have kind of felt that, I'll put my name up, and if they want me, fine. If they don't, I can look in the mirror and say, well, at least I tried to serve and do something for the state. So that's what I have to say.
Thank you. And welcome to the committee. You and I had a chance to visit before this hearing, and I'm not going to ask a question just yet, but I will be back with a question. I want to give the committee members the opportunity to ask any questions first. So Senator Kawasaki, then Senator Kyman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for being here. and your willingness to serve on this Board of Fish. It's often controversial, and you'll have a lot of input in the way things happen here with this natural resource. Can you tell me just a little bit how you would make decisions as a member of the 7-member board?
Well, through the chairs. I think the board's responsibility is to conserve and develop a resource for all Alaskans. And I believe that subsistence is the number one bylaw. I guess it is bylaw, of course. And I feel bad for these people that aren't getting fish. And I believe in a terminal fishery, basically, where the fish go back to the streams that they were born in. And so if there's, through allotments and so on, if there's room for, I know there's a big controversy over fisheries that, area, I'm searching for the word here for intercept fisheries. And my answer to that would be things of that nature. If the commercial people, not the commercial people, I'm sorry, if the subsistence people are getting the fish they need and there's an allocation of fish that's available for an intercept fishery, well, that would be something to look at. And, you know, we'd certainly look at all the information on that.
Thank you.
Senator Klayman?
So and thank you for the time we spent both in my office and in the hall. We had a very meaningful discussion about good dishwashing techniques. People say you think you're in politics when you get here in the Capitol, but fish politics is more challenging. From your career and a variety of different centers, how do you deal with what I at least perceive as often divided votes on a board? I mean, we've been hearing about some 4-3 votes on this board, and how will you approach when you get in situations on the board in which you really see there's division on the board? And
well, I think all you can, I'm sorry, through the chairs, I think all you can do is listen to the information, and you make a decision on what you feel is the best decision. And you have no control over the other board members. And all you can do is vote what you think is right. And if they're close votes, so be it. And if you don't like what they do, well, you know, maybe when the meeting's over, you take them out line and club them or something. I'm just kidding. But, you know, you have to live with whatever. And everybody's got a right to their opinion. And I've found sometimes you think you disagree with somebody, you don't particularly like, but all of a sudden you find, hey, man, I never thought about that, and that's a good point. And so we take all that into consideration.
Thank you.
Okay. Talk to me a little bit about your sport fishing background.
Well, as I said, I went through – I did speak to that, but I've done a lot in the state all through Southeast and Prince William Sound the other areas, Bristol Bay, the east side over there, the Clutina and the Galkana, which Copper River feeds. I guess I didn't mention this before, but I'd like to see my grandsons be able to catch king salmon.
There you go. That's what I'm looking for.
Okay. And I'm glad you brought that up because, I think it's important. It's surely been a passion of mine, and I just love it.
Any other questions from committee members? Seeing none, we're going to – Senator Geisel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Svensson, you've written quite a few – well, not quite a few. You have a letter to the editor in here recently about catch and release on the Kenai for kings and some opinions about child care. But I guess, you know, your name might be kind of common, and so this may not apply to you, but have you ever had a hunting violation?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to speak to that. And I spoke to it in the last resource committee, but I was going to get to that at the end here, but I guess that's a good time. I'll tell you the story. In 1996, we were we were once out of Lake Clark, flew over that area and hunted caribou, and we looked at the regs and thought, well, you know, if we see a bear, maybe we'll harvest a bear, but it wasn't something that we were concerned about. So we checked the regs, said it was open, asked the guys, the Regal Air, how do you guys, do you think the bear's open? Yeah, it's open. So turns out to harvest a brown bear. I harvest a brown bear. I take it into Fish and Game, have them seal it. And the next day, I get a call back from Fish and Game, and they say, well, it wasn't open. And I go, what do you mean it wasn't open? I said, you need to go back and read the regulations. So the next day, he calls and says, well, it was open, but only for subsistence. And I go, okay. So I pull out the reg book. I'm ready to go down to Fish and Game. And, you know, look, can't you read? Well, we were in 9B, and in 9A, they had a stipulation in there saying that it was open for subsistence, but it wasn't open for another week for just taking a bear. So I go to court, and I have an attorney friend, and I said, you know, he says, well, I think we could beat this. I mean, this is the way this is written is really confusing to have something under another unit for another unit. So, but they offered a $500 fine and a disposition of sentence if no other violation in a year. Well, obviously, the disposition of sentence never happened. And I knew that because I went and looked through there one time and go, wow, it's still in there. Well, that's okay. I don't really care. So I go to court, and that's a lady judge. And I said, can I bring this regulation book up and show you? You know, I'm 50 years old then or so, and 50 whatever I was. I said, can I show you? I was confused because I said, I've never had a hunting or fishing violation. She says, sure. So I bring the book up there, and she goes, wow, I see how you could be confused by this. But she said, you agreed to this $500 fine. So she says, I'm bound by that. But she says, you don't have to do the 3 days of community service or anything. So the Fish and Game, then the next year, rewrote the regulation properly into 9B so it was easier to understand. And I knew some of the guys over there, and they called me and said, yeah, we changed it just for you, and we call this the Greg Svensson regulation. So that's the bear story. And I'm glad you brought it up because I was going to bring it up, but I'd kind of half forgotten about it.
Thank you, Mr. Svensson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Seeing no further questions from committee, now we will open public testimony. And is there anyone in the room that would like to testify? Seeing none, we're going to go back online to Kenai. Mr. Hollier.
Yes, thank you again, Mr. Chairman. And speaking toward Mr. Svensson there, one thing about board members, I've participated in the Board of Fish process for 5 decades now. And you see board members that get on there that vote strictly party lines. And, you know, when we talk about subsistence, sport, or commercial. And I would hope that every board member that's nominated today would come to the Board of Fish with an open mind and just not vote party lines all the way across the board. I've seen that for many, many appointees. And for Mr. Svensson, it sounds like he's a sports fisherman, which is fine. That brings good balance. He didn't say he played basketball, and to paraphrase him, he said if it didn't work out at the board meeting, he'd take him outside and club him, and that was kind of how his attitude was playing basketball, but he was very aggressive and a good basketball player, so I'm going to give Mr. Svensson the benefit of the doubt and hope that he would not vote party lines, look at the data, and vote accordingly, and I would approve his confirmation. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hollier. Next, Shannon Martin, Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. Hello again, and put yourself on the record, please, and provide us with your testimony.
All right. Well, good afternoon again, Co-Chair Bishop and Madam Co-Chair Diesel, members of the Senate Resources Committee. For the record, this is Shannon Martin, Executive Director for the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association, and we'd like to express our support for Greg Svensson With his 6 decades of knowledge from participating in fisheries throughout Alaska, we truly feel that he's ideal for this role. Recently, I had the opportunity to meet with him in Anchorage during the statewide Finfish for Fish meeting, and I found him very approachable, and we believe that he'll consider input from all stakeholders and the fisheries managers when weighing these very important decisions. His willingness to serve in this arena is commended, as oftentimes these decisions that are made that affect user groups, they can be pretty divisive, and people walk away from the table not satisfied. So we just want to put our support in for Greg and our conversations with him. He's let us know that he wants to put the resource first, and that's important to us. So I ask for your support in confirming him and moving his nomination forward. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for your testimony. All right. That appears to be everyone online. There was no one in the room, so public testimony is closed. Thank you for your testimony.
And I, through the chairs, I appreciate you guys listening to my to me also.
You're welcome.
And would appreciate your support.
All right. With that, we're going to switch gears and go to our last Board of Fisheries appointment, Mr. Jared Godfrey. Mr. Godfrey, welcome to Senate Resources. Thank you for being here today. Please put yourself on the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Jared Godfrey. I'm calling in from my office in Anchorage. In my, basically, I have previously served on the Board of Fisheries, but I'll start from the beginning. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I'm Alaska Native. Both my parents' ancestral lineage comes from two different villages in the Kodiak Islands. My dad was a state trooper, so we transferred around the state as I was growing up. I was born in Juneau, started school in Juneau. He transferred to Northway, then back to Juneau. Eventually, we transferred to Bethel. And then by the time I was going into junior high, we moved to the Anchorage area. I grew up spending my summers commercial fishing on the Kodiak Island fishery with my on my grandpa and my uncle's various boats from my third grade to my second year of college. I went to college out of state, but after my second year of college, I transitioned working in the North Slope oil fields. Eventually worked on Fort Richardson for a period of time. I also lived in Valdez, worked on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline for a period of time. And 2015, I took an appointment to Governor Walker's administration, senior advisor on rural business and intergovernmental affairs. In that capacity, one of my roles was to back up the then lieutenant governor, who was the point person on all fisheries matters in the state. So in particular, in Southwest and South Central, if he couldn't make certain meetings or was out of town, he would ask me to, whether it was a Board of Fish or staffing him in meetings in Anchorage or taking meetings on his behalf with various stakeholders in the fisheries. That led to, after I left the administration and the new administration came in, I was appointed to the Board of Fisheries. I did my first three years on that term, but in that time, my daughter was in high school and she made a determination that she wanted to go to college out of state. And I was on a number of various other boards and committees, plus my day job, which required a bit of travel. So I opted not to re-up at the time because I wanted to spend more time at home since my daughter was going to be leaving the state. And the easiest way to get back some time was not to continue on the Board of Fisheries. She's now finishing her freshman year of college out of state. My son is in high school, but he's not leaving the state after high school. So that's not a consideration anymore for me. I've got to be honest, it's, the learning curve is steep to serve on the Board of Fisheries. And once a person, you know, gets 3 years, it kind of takes 3 years to get your legs, learning all the different user groups and stakeholders in each of the three regions that it's divided up to over 3 years. It's almost a shame for someone not to continue another term just because at that point, you just got a better handle on the subject matter and the various players and stakeholders. So I opted to go ahead and try to seek a second term with a gap in the middle. And that's the end of my testimony.
Okay. Questions from committee members? Senator Wilikowski, floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jared, good to hear you on the phone. I appreciated your longtime service to the state. I do have some questions. about some of your comments, though, regarding Cook Inlet over the years. Back in 2020, during the Upper Cook Inlet meeting, there was a deliberation going on regarding Upper Cook Inlet Salmon Management Plan. And your comment at the time regarding conservation of king salmon was, quote, tantamount to that conservation of king salmon was, quote, tantamount to just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic from the standpoint that you're foregoing sockeye harvest in exchange for delaying the inevitable. And I'm just curious if you think that attempts to preserve the king salmon running in Cook Inlet are really just delaying the inevitable, and that we're sort of the future is that we're just going to see a crash in the king salmon. There's really nothing we can do about it.
Through the chair, it really would depend on which specific stock we're talking about at the time. And the reality is I don't view that to be the case on every stream and every return. But from a philosophical standpoint, when I'm looking at that, my approach to that is, what if we're managing for one single species and the net benefit, in my opinion, is far outweighed by the net detriment, in particular if otherwise harvestable sockeye go unharvested and it far exceed the escapement goals of that particular stock in that stream, then from my perspective, that's probably not the best approach. But it's a case-by-case basis, strictly based on the data in front of me, what the biologists are presenting as well as the public testimony. So if that sounds, extreme, my comments were a bit hyperbolic at the time. It's strictly based on what was in front of me at the time. I can't sit here and cite chapter and verse of what I was hearing. What I can say is, from a philosophical standpoint, if there is a stock and a stream that is historically underperforming and all management efforts, up to that point were failing to work, at what point do you cut your losses and say, well, let's focus on the other species if, in fact, the efforts and any efforts short of just closing the entire stream down in the harvest, whether it's commercial sport or subsistence, is off the table as an option. That having been said, when it comes to subsistence, previous appointments have already mentioned it, that is the priority of the state, and that's well known and established. If anybody is entitled to harvest and there's only enough stock available for any user group, then by all means it should be subsistent. But it's an extreme measure to shut down an entire fishery for a river that historically hasn't had huge numbers of a specific species such as king. If we're talking specifically about Kenai itself, I view that from a different lens.
Follow-ups, Senator Wilkowski?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that was, and I don't expect you to remember everything you said over time. That was 2020 at the Upper Cook Inlet meeting regarding King Salmon Management Plan. And you made somewhat of a similar statement, I think, last summer during, the Kenai King Salmon Plan discussion. And your statement at that time, there was some discussion about making it discussion about set net and some of the, we've heard over the years is that kings travel closer to shores, and so maybe if you have some set net restrictions, you can protect the kings and maybe preserve the sockeye run. And you, at that time, you voted in support of liberalizing the set net fishery, and your statement at that time was that slowing commercial activities to conserve kings was akin to, quote, stepping over dollars to pick up pennies. And I'm just curious. I mean, what in that case it was a restricted. It was just set net in that particular instance. It was not shutting down fishery, but just dealing with the set net issue. And so, do you think there's anything we can do to preserve the kings, or do you think they're worth preserving?
Through the chair, I'll give you an example based off of my memory. So we had adopted a policy of what the scape and what the fishery is going to be going into that year in the summer. And by, I believe, don't quote me, but I'm pretty sure it was early August. We had some numbers of the count on sockeye that had gone unharvested, and yet it would exceed the escapement targets necessary for the Kenai, and that was 34,000 sockeye that could have been harvested by the upper segment, east side segmenters. And the number of kings that were observed, which was in the margin of error, were, I believe, 11, which means it could have been 22 and it could have been zero. So from my perspective, that few number of kings, if in fact, and bear in mind, even if a king gets caught, it's not guaranteed to die. There's a certain percentage of them that would still survive when they're pulled out of the net and released. But be that as it may, if we're talking about 11 versus 34,000 that could be harvested and fished by these set netters, but for the fact there was potentially 11 kings that could have got caught as a non-target species, when I say stepping over dollars to pick up pennies, I'm not talking about in a monetary sense. I'm talking about looking at a smaller benefit at the expense of a greater benefit to a different user group and stakeholders. If it was 50 kings, I wouldn't have viewed it the same way. But the other thing is, the Kenai is an enormous river, obviously, and the spawning grounds are all over the place there. But even for those 34,000, some could say, all right, 34,000 sockeye make it up the river, at least their offspring and their progeny has a chance to return the life cycle and create a great return. Well, not necessarily if they crowd out the spawning grounds in the same area and they die without spawning because the spawning grounds are too crowded out. So I even saw a net detriment on that side, that their progeny may not even be back in a few years. And in the meantime, this fishery that's in distress was not provided any level of relief. And now, mind you, I voted with another member to have an emergency meeting for consideration on that. An emergency meeting happened, and the other member who voted to have an emergency meeting didn't vote. He voted the majority, but a different board member, myself, were in the minority, so it was a 5-2 vote. Clearly, the rest of the board members didn't feel there was a need to pivot in season. And it's a pretty high bar to do something like that, and I understand that. And I basically look at the fishery, that particular fishery, that these are legacy fisheries handed down from generations. Some of them are 100-year-old fisheries. And trying to give them a lifeline, the reality is it's a tough place for them to be, and I understand that. But nonetheless, I was in the minority on that vote anyways.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski?
No one else has questions.
Oh, I got one when you're done. But keep going.
Okay, a different topic.
A different topic.
Yeah. Area M has been a topic of a lot of discussion in building a lot of concern. And with respect to the rejection of Proposal 140 at the recent Area M meeting, do you believe the Board of Fisheries decided that correctly?
It would be quite presumptuous of me, having not attended or been there or heard all the testimony, seen all the data, listened to the reports, and participated in the public testimony and the Q&A process and deliberation, to make an assessment on that. I will say that would have been a very difficult vote for me if I was on the board, but I'm not privy to everything that was in front of the board at the time to make that decision. I can tell you that they need relief, and to essentially run the risk of having that fishery, way of life, a culture and a history that is on the brink of never returning is of utmost concern to me, and I'm extremely happy that TCC and NVCP issued that lawsuit against the feds and NOAA, because I fully believe the vast majority of beyond what's out in the ecosystem in the world and the water that we don't know about, when it's targeted to human conduct, I believe that the bycatch in the federal waters and North Pacific Fisheries Management Council is too gracious and too under-regulated, unenforced, and I believe by and large there's the larger problem there. But if in fact there's data that indicates that Area M has had an uptick commensurate to the downtick of the return of the Yukon-bound salmon, then right there, that's compelling evidence. I wasn't there to see that, so I don't know, but you got to use the data in front of you. And if, in fact, they could show over the last number of years as their stocks decline, that area M, because they do have that biology and they do test it, has gone up commensurately, then that would certainly be an area where I can understand trying to provide them relief.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Godfrey, this is Senator Bishop. Along the same lines, in listening to your testimony and your past service to the Board of Fish, and thank you for that, and also serving on all your public participation over the years. I represent the Yukon from the Canadian border all the way to Holy Cross, and have got family and friends on that river. And this is going to be the third year in a row, no kings, nothing. And looks like no fall chums either. So with your comments being said, you had made one comment about to Senator Wilikowski's second question on the that you had asked for an emergency meeting. Knowing what you know about the Yukon from your past service and knowing about this last board meeting, et cetera, would that be something you might entertain again if you were selected to say, hey, let's maybe go back and have another emergency meeting to look at to get spooled up and look at the data?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would qualify that by saying the bar to get to an emergency meeting after a vote has been taken generally would require data that was unavailable to the board members at the time when the vote was taken. Well, I wasn't a board member at the time, so I could say it was unavailable to me. The problem would be for any other board members that were there at the time, they would need to be on the losing side of that vote to then say, I would reconsider based on new information or data. I personally was not on the board, and if asked if approached, I would ask for some information. I'd be entirely open to that, because I'll be honest, just in the last couple of weeks, I've had conversations with some people at some events I was at out of state where some Alaska Native organizations, tribal organizations. I personally sit on my Native Village of Port Lyons Tribal Council. I'm a tribal member. And they were sharing some data with me, not hard data, just verbally, that I was unaware of. And I think that desperate times call for desperate measures, and I would be open to that, yes.
All right, thank you. Senator Wilikowski has a follow-up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, it's a tough job. I get it. And we in the legislature give the authority generally to figure these issues out and figure out. We try not to get involved in allocation issues. But I'm could you just talk a little bit about your thought process? In Cook Inlet, for example, we've got 50-60% of the state's population within a four-hour drive of the Kenai River, Kasilof River. And then out in rural Alaska, you've got people all up and down the Yukon, Kuskokwim, all the rivers that run out there that survive, that rely on these fish for survival, their cultural. And how do you weigh that? I'm just curious how you weigh, the interests of thousands of years of cultural subsistence on a river versus, a couple hundred commercial permit holders. And in the case of Cook Inlet, hundreds of thousands of Alaskans who rely on the fish for personal use, sport fishing, versus, again, a couple hundred commercial permit holders. How do you balance that? What's your thought process?
Well, first and foremost is the subsistence users are priority, just as the state's made that clear. It's the same way in my mind when we were one of the board meetings when we were in Cordova dealing with a Copper River, trying to find a balance with the Otna region, which is way, 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 way up river. A lot of people had a bite at the apple before they get up there. That was obviously a major challenge, and it's really not much different than the Yukon because a whole bunch of other people getting a bite at the apple before those salmon can return to that river. So the largest priority to me is, in fact, the subsistence users. And in the Yukon, it's a unique animal from my perspective because they're not on the road system and they're very isolated. And those salmon journey thousands of miles and come back, but almost nobody else has a chance to use the term I was using, a bite at the apple, from a spore standpoint or a commercial standpoint, other than Area M, and then what's going on with the trolling fleet, you know, out in federally managed waters, in say the Cook Inlet or Copper River, you've got other stakeholders, other user groups. They get a chance at those salmon before they make it in river where usually subsistence is engaged in. At the end of the day, if the stock of concern, a threatened stock, and conservation is of the highest order, meaning, you know, we're not maximum sustained yield because all the user groups are getting a piece of that and everything is going fine, then I'm all for shutting it down. And letting it rebound if it can. You know, to your original question, when you're asking me about the king species, if we're managing, we're talking about managing for a truly threatened stock that one of the other appointments was talking about some of the king challenges, you know, up in the Mat 2, and they've been that way for quite some time, is the solution to shut down all the northern bound sockeye, you know, on this side of the Cook Inlet or that side of the Cook Inlet, in order to hope that a few kings make it up there. The best you can do is look at the numbers, look at the data, and then balance the interest. But as far as my approach to it is, subsistence comes first, and the commercial interest. I've looked at what economists have said, and economists can do magical things with data, and they can get you any outcome, you know, any designed outcome that you ask for, generally speaking. And I've looked at economists say the economic multiplier effect and the value of the dollar from commercial user group versus sport, which is typically charter and individual sport user group, is far outpaces that. But I've also seen the other side of it, where it says, no, if you got sport users, there's all these other expenses that go into the economy. And it's, I'll be honest, it requires far more variable input, so it's less compelling, but it's kind of compelling. But at the end of the day, anybody who's doing anything commercially, or if you're a charter guide or sport, bear in mind, sport, you can eat that fish, but sport by definition is, that's not, you know, it's sport versus personal use or subsistence. Anything you're doing engaging that commerce, as far as commercial or as a charter guide, you're exchanging that service to get that fish in exchange for money, whereas personal use or subsistence is what that money would have bought you. So essentially, the commodity is the fish, and if you sell the fish to get money, that money is going to be used to buy food for your table. But if you just catch the fish, it is food for your table, and you can cut out the middleman, which is the currency, right? So I don't know if I answered your question very well because I'm kind of all over the place here on that. But I take it a case-by-case basis, but often the particulars don't change that much in the region when it comes to the different user groups.
Okay. Thank you. I just like, before we go to public testimony, Mr. Godfrey, I'd like you and the other Board of Fishery members to take this into consideration. I think it would behoove the board to take a field trip on the Yukon River and talk to the people. Senator?
I'm entirely open to that.
Senator Klayman?
So, Mr. Godfrey, kind of the same question I asked Mr. Sundson. The Board of Fish often has some very divided votes. You've served on the Board of Fish for one term. What is your approach to dealing with a board that often has conflicts?
Well, first of all, I don't question anyone's motives. For start, I take everyone at face value. I became friends with everybody I served with, even though some of them, on a lot of contentious votes, including some pretty lively debates on a reconsideration I asked for in Prince William Sound, and we were sitting right next to each other. And, you know, on the public record, it got pretty interesting. You know, he and I could go and joke and, you know, have a beer afterwards. So I don't take anything personal. I assume everybody, I give everyone the benefit of the doubt. They're there for pure motives to serve the state, preserve the resource, and honor the stakeholders. The reality is, when there was 5-2 or 6-1 votes, I'm pretty sure in my time on the board, I was in that 1 or 2 minority more than anybody else was. That having been said, the approach that I used, and I saw it incorporated by one of the new board members, and I when that board member asked for advice, I said, here's one of the best things you do, is don't let any of the stakeholders, if it's going to be a contentious proposal, don't let them know that they can count your vote. Because if they can't count your vote and they feel like they're coming into that meeting with the leverage and the upper hand, they're not going to be willing to compromise with the other side. So if you don't let them know that they got your support, and it's going to be contentious, and I saw that work multiple times where hours after the meeting, on the 7th day or 8th day in a row of a meeting, we would find a room, we would go sit down with both the sides and spend 2 to 3 hours trying to find out if we could carve out a happy meeting, because the side that thought they had the leverage didn't know for sure if they could count the votes because you didn't show your cards. And maybe it's because you hadn't made up your mind, but you were leaning one way or the other, but you didn't let them know. And we averted two really tricky proposals from 4 different stakeholder groups by doing that, because they ultimately compromised. So nobody walked away 100% happy, but nobody walked away totally disappointed either. That was the tactic I used. And what happened is we got to avoid that 4-3 vote, not knowing whose side was going to get the 4 and who's going to get the 3. We got to avoid having those. And there's nothing more refreshing than leaving a meeting like that where you know you didn't totally disappoint and tick off one side or the other.
Okay, thank you.
There's one short follow-up.
Follow-up.
If you have one lesson that you take with you from your first term on the board, assuming you're confirmed in 1 minute or less, what's the biggest lesson you take with you to the second term?
Seek out. I've always made myself available. There's a line that nobody can cross. They come and ask staff to come and get you. And my first year, a whole bunch of people that went to many of these meetings would say, wow, you're really accessible. I gave people my phone number and stuff. And others, the stakeholders would say, you sure you want to do that? And I said, I'm here serving. So, yeah, this is kind of make myself accessible. So a lot of people, take advantage of that fully, and I appreciate that. But I think the one lesson would be go and seek out some people that are a little reluctant, even though they give their public testimony or something. They're really reluctant to approach you and actually – go and find them and see if you can get them to talk a little bit more about their issue and their position.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you, Mr. Godfrey, for your testimony. Seeing no further questions from the committee, we're now going to open public testimony. Public testimony is now open. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify? Seeing none, we're going to go online back to K9. Mr. Hollier, thank you for staying with us, and the floor is yours.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chairman. My name is Gary Hollier from Kenai, Alaska again. The Board of Fish is definitely a learning curve. Mr. Godfrey brought this up. I'm sitting here looking at the management plans. They've got all sorts of stuff, a BEG, a biological escape control, burden of conservation, a harvestable surplus. You got MSY, which is maximum sustained yield, OEG, optimum escapement goal, optimum sustained yield, OSY, SET, sustainable escapement threshold, and on and on. These board members, when they go to these, make regulatory changes, they've got to be very up to speed on how each of these terms apply to the new regulations. And I think a board member should be, if he's a good board member, should be appointed to a second term. I was glad to see Mr. Godfrey put his name back in the list. I feel he was a really top shelf board member, very articulate, and he definitely made himself available. Not many people hand out their personal cell phone numbers. And he was available before, during, and after the meetings. He'd look at the data. He'd look at the people's input. He'd look at the departments. And he'd analyze the data and vote accordingly. So he was one of the type of members that board member that I think that the state of Alaska really needs. I would hope that he would get passed through this committee and confirmed. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hollier, for your comments. Next, we're going to go to Mr. Coleman back on the Kenai.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly appreciate the opportunity to testify. I would echo what Mr. Hollier said. Mr. Godfrey is open and very transparent, does his homework. I particularly like that a board member is wanting to see data and science so that he can make sound decisions and also take a look at that the history, the economics of situations, and come to an informed decision. And I've been going to these board hearings relative to Cook Inlet since 1977, where the Upper Cook Inlet Salmon Management Plan was promulgated, and some many of hearings have been contentious. But when you get thoughtful and considerate board members that try to put all those points that the aforementioned together to come up with sound decisions, then you may not leave there happy, but you know you got heard, and that's a very much a premium. And I hope that you move the appointment forward, and that Mr. Godfrey is confirmed, and I appreciate the time again. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Seeing no further testifiers online or in the room, we're going to close public testimony on the Board of Fish appointments. We're going to go back now and see if our big game appointment is before us. And Mr. Flores, are you with us?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Okay. Would you please put yourself on the record and speak to your Big Game Commercial Services Board appointment, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Resource Committee. My name is Mike Flores. Lived in Soldotna for 34 years and been married for 33 with three boys that served in the Marine Corps, all achieved the level of sergeant, and two of them are back working in the business with me. I came to Alaska as a big game guide, bush pilot, and passionate about the hunting and fishing in Alaska. I served as past board member for the Alaska Charter Association for three terms and a delegate for the International Pacific Halibut Commission from 2015 to 2020, representing the Charter Halibut Fleet. In 2012, I started on a committee with the North Pacific Fishery Management Council regulating the Charter Halibut allocation, and I still do that today. I just finished an appointment on the Alaska Bycatch Task Force, which was 65 meetings in 10 months, and just accepted an appointment for the Salmon Research Task Force for the Governor and NOAA. I'm here today for my reappointment hearing for the Alaska Big Game Commercial Services Board, and I currently hold the Marine Transporter seat and chair the Transporter Subcommittee for the last 3 years. There's growing concern that there are too many transporters and that certain areas on Kodiak and Southeast have been overran by transporters. In 1995, when the board sunsetted, we had a transporter sticker that went away at that time, and we're in the process of bringing that back to better identify who is transporting and who is just outfilling their freezer. So a lot of work to be done. There is an increase in transporters. We had 22 new ones last year. 19 were Marine, 3 were aviation. This year so far, we've had 12 people get licenses issued. At Board of Game last month, we heard loud and clear from the Fognak Native Corporation and villagers, people from Uzinki and Fort Lyons, along with the Kodiak AEC, that they felt like, you know, there was just a big influx in boat-based transporters, but we really can't identify them until we bring the sticker back. The data we're getting from Fish and Game, that the average harvest by non-residents is only 1.2 deer. And so there was a proposal at Board of Game to reduce that to one deer for non-resident, and that did pass. So a lot of work has to be done. I'm open for questions.
Okay, well, thank you. And good job on them three Marines.
Yeah. We're glad that they all came home to Alaska.
Yes, thank you. Questions from committee members? Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I caught it.
I caught it. You did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Flores, for being online this afternoon. A question for you. There's one section on the conflicts of interest, and it mentions that is it possible that you would benefit financially from any decisions made by that board? And I'm just wondering if that you wrote no, if that's true, or because I actually don't know exactly what the board does. But it looks like you are involved in, well, you have a lodge ownership, you've got you're also a pilot, and maybe you're a guide. I can't tell from this.
Through the chair, thank you for the question. I am a Marine transporter. That's how I make my living. But I've always chosen the resource first. And at Board of Game, the motion was for to reduce the harvest to one deer. And I spoke on it that most non-residents come to Alaska to harvest a big game trophy. And our transporting service is the same way, and we want guys to harvest a big buck. And so we felt like there's no reason for them to shoot a doe or a spike when they come to Alaska on a big game hunt. And the board adopted that, that it should be buck only. And I felt like, you know, that's what they come for, and that leaves more animals on the table for the locals. But again, I think resource first. Yes, you know, I would benefit from some kind of a moratorium or limited entry. But we need to look at the big picture. And, you know, if it meant me downsizing, which we've already done, we have done some downsizing on our own to take less animals, we would do that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Seeing no further questions from committee members, we're going to open up public testimony. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Don't see anybody. We're going to go online back to Kenai. Mr. Hollier. All right. Mr. Coleman, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I am online. I'm more versed in fisheries issues, as you might imagine, but I do know Mr. Flores, and I know him to be a fair and equitable guy. I think that that's in his bones. He's a conservationist. I think he's the right guy for the job to do the things that he's doing, and he's a quality person with a quality family, and I wholeheartedly endorse his reappointment to the board.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Mr. Flores, are you still with us?
I am. I just want to say, you know, you guys working on the appointments for Board of Fish, I sympathize with the issues in front of the state for king salmon on the Yukon, the Kuskokwim, Carlet, the Kenai. Being on the task force was really an eye-opening experience, and I wish that we had have had this task force 10 years ago. We probably wouldn't be talking about no fish in the Yukon and Kuskokwim and the Kenai, and the whole set netter shut down. There's a lot of moving parts to it, but anyway, that's my two cents.
Yes, the co-chair Giesel has a question, I believe.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Flores, you talked about you know, the resource comes first, you'd be willing to reduce your own commercial benefits. Tell me where you stand on guide concession areas.
So being on the board, and we have had almost every meeting we've had so far has been about conflict in the field. And it seems like there's been too many. I think it's a good thing. On the same hand, last year in 22, we had 27 less registered guides last year. And I don't know if that's because of all the closures up north, but it definitely looks like, you know, a big reduction. It's the first time we've seen that reduction, that big of a reduction in the last 3 years. But there's definitely areas that's been overran. So, I think the concession area would be a good thing.
Thank you very much, Mr. Flores. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All right, Mr. Flores, thank you. We're done with public testimony. Thanks for taking the time to call. And let me flip my page here. This concludes all the appointments for today. Senator Giesel, do we have a motion?
I got it.
Possibly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the Senate Resources Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointees and recommends the following names be forwarded to the joint session for consideration. Big Game Commercial Services Board, Michael Flores. Board of Fisheries, Mike Wood, Greg Svedson, and Jared Godfrey. This does not reflect intent of any of the members to vote for or against these individuals during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
Thank you. All right. That will stick around after we gavel out. As usual, we'll sign the committee report. And thank you all for attending today. Just for next week, our meeting will consist of on Monday, April 17th at 3:30, second hearing of Senate Bill 69, Geothermal, first hearing of HJR 11, address air pollution in Fairbanks by Representative Stapp. First hearing of SB 82 Cook Inlet, that's the permit buyback by Senator Bjorkman, and that will conclude today's meeting. We're gaveled out at 4:47.